Welcome, guys, to the Gridiron Gurus. We are wrapping up week six, is that right? Or week five. We're going into week six. So we're doing the week five recap. Not a whole lot of games that were really close last week, but the big news from last week was Paul Christ was fired by Wisconsin. Guy had been there since, I think it was 2015, had a winning record. I think the only time that they didn't win eight ball games was the COVID year, and I still think he was 4-3 that year. I'll look up those stats just to make 100% sure on that. But really confusing to me to get rid of a guy mid-season, especially somebody that's been, I think it was three years ago that he had them in the conference title, went to the Rose Bowl and lost. I'm not really sure who they lost to in that one, but just really confusing to me that Wisconsin let him go going into week six, is 2-3. To me, it almost sounds like there's something more behind the scenes going on there that I don't know about.
I didn't actually realize how long his tenure. I'm looking at this right now. I didn't realize how long his tenure at Wisconsin has been. He was actually offensive coordinator under Brett Bielema when he was there. From 2006 to 2011, he was offensive coordinator. Left Wisconsin in 2012, went to Pitt, and then came back in 2015. So he's pretty much spent him like a good portion of his coaching career.
Well, not only his coaching career, but he also was he played quarterback there.
Yeah, I mean he's a Wisconsin, you know, product through and through, and like you were saying about his head coaching record with them. He went 10-3, 11-3, 13-1, 8-5, 10-4, 4-3, which was the COVID year, 9-4, and then right now they're sitting at 2-3. The worst finish he's ever had in the conference, 2020. So I'm seeing third in the West during the COVID year.
Well, that was COVID. I throw that year out.
So for that, you know, and the guy's never missed a postseason. So far, he's been to a BCS / New Year's Six Bowl three times, won two of them. So for them to fire him this early on in the year on a 2-3 is a below 500 record, but it's not like he's sitting 0-5 or, you know, or 1-4. You know, I mean, there's still some salvage to be made with the season. So for them to fire him like that, you know, we were talking off air about it. You mentioned that could there be more to the story. I think there's absolutely got to be more to the story than just firing the guy because of a 2-3 season.
Right.
Or a 2-3 start. Let me rephrase that.
Right. I mean, that, to me, the guy is – he's 67-26 overall as the head coach of Wisconsin. 43-18 record. That, to me, is pretty good. You've been to – I think three conference title games.
Yep.
And those same 3 years is when he went to the New Year's Six Bowl. To me, it's confusing, and I think there is. I think there's something more behind the scenes.
Well, he just won it what 3 years ago, the Big Ten or 2019.
He was in the game. I don't know if.
I believe they won it that year because they went to the Rose Bowl, lost to the Rose Bowl, and I'm trying to think now who they lost the Rose Bowl to.
Oregon.
Was it Oregon? Okay. I was thinking Oregon, but I wasn't sure if that was right. But
no, they actually lost the Big Ten title game to Ohio State, but Ohio State was in the
– Oh, in the playoffs.
In the playoffs. Okay. So they defaulted to the Rose Bowl.
Okay.
In 2019, he won his division.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the year we're talking about.
I don't – for me, like, I kind of get in a way that you're not competing with – well, I mean, you beat Michigan 2 years ago. You're not really – how serious does Wisconsin want to be about football? Obviously, they're serious about football. I think if you look at the Big W, it speaks football. Everybody knows that logo.
Yep.
But how serious do they want to be? Do they want to – consistently each year compete with Ohio State, Michigan, win Big Ten championships, be a top 15, top 10 program? for me as an outsider, I don't see Wisconsin as being able to do that. I know, and we've talked off air about them wanting to possibly get Lance Leopold. Sure, that sounds like a great idea.
It's a great idea. But why are you throwing all of your cards into that basket?
You're throwing all of your cards into that basket. I'm not saying they're doing this because I have no idea. I'm just speculating.
Right.
But you're throwing all of your cards into that basket, and you're getting rid of a good head coach.
Yeah.
In the three, four games into the season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Makes no sense to me. I don't know what getting rid of him right now does for the program.
That's kind of where I'm at with it. Is, you know, you're getting rid of an established head coach that's actually been successful. For who? Because you're not pulling away a Dabo Sweeney, a Jim Harbaugh, a Ryan Day, a Nick Saban, a Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian. Like, I mean, I could go on a full list of coaches that you're not going to get based on where they're at their programs, because their programs are bigger and more prominent than you. You're going to have to get a coach that, you know, a Bill O'Brien, a Lance Leopold. You know, you're going to have to go after a coordinator at a Power 5 that wants to be a head coach again, or a head coach at a small Power 5 or a Group of 5 that wants to go, you know, climb the ladder, is what you're going to have to go after. You know, Luke Fickell, Jamie Chadwell. Yeah, he always comes to mind. You know, and then, like I said, you know, the coordinators, Bill Bryan's the one that, you know, first comes to mind, just because, you know, he wants to be a head coach. He's probably the next one in that role. But there are other head coaching jobs out there as well. Now, I think of the jobs that are out there now, you've got Georgia Tech, Arizona State, Wisconsin, potentially Auburn, if Auburn makes the call. If I'm Auburn, I'm making the call now, because Wisconsin is now the biggest job on the market of the ones I just mentioned. But I'm saying if as of right now, I think Wisconsin's the biggest job on the market.
If they get rid of Harsin, once they
get rid of Brian Harsin, Auburn's obviously the biggest job on the market.
Yeah,
that's why if I'm Auburn, I'm getting rid of Brian Harsin. If I'm for sure going to get rid of Brian Harsin at the end of the year, I'm getting rid of him now, because I want to, you know, create attention from those coaches that, you know, I'm looking at, the bigger, more prominent, established coaches that I'm trying to attract. I want to get them before Wisconsin does.
It makes more sense for Auburn to, you know, have gotten rid of Brian Harsin a week ago than it did for
Wisconsin. Yeah.
Here is my reason why Auburn won't fire Harsin until the end of the year, and why Wisconsin should have waited, and all these programs should have waited. The transfer portal is just now open. Guys can leave. You're going to start seeing players, in my opinion, from Wisconsin start sitting, because they don't know who the next coach is. More than likely, they're going to transfer anyways. So why would they risk the rest of the season on an injury? They're just going to sit out. You're in the transfer portal at the end of the year. You're just hurting your program by firing a coach midseason. That's why I think Auburn will not fire until, you know, probably after the Iron Bowl.
You know, I'm forgetting
that job.
Well,
to me, I think Wisconsin has too many good players. I mean, they're a prominent Power 5 college football program. They have several guys that are going to get drafted.
Right.
You know, can I see your name off the guys that are getting get drafted? No. I mean, but it's Wisconsin. They're going to have, you know, three, four offensive linemen
P5,
every draft.
Right. Any P5, you're going to have guys that
are going to necessarily. I mean, I don't see them. Transfer portal, maybe it's a possibility depending on who rolls in next. I don't see them sitting out. I mean.
Oh, I can.
Maybe a bowl game. That's one thing. But to sit out an entire season makes absolutely no sense to me.
Here's my argument on that is, if you think you're going to get drafted and guys around you start sitting, why would you not follow suit instead of putting yourself out there playing a game that you could potentially get injured and ruin an NFL career?
I think it sends a message.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good message, but
I'm with you, but it's just the world that we live in now.
That. I think that, I don't know, which I kind of thought the NFL scouts wouldn't go after players.
And there's not a guy on that Wisconsin football team that has the opportunity to sit out an entire season and still
have the tape,
and still get drafted. I mean, those guys are talented.
Sit out an entire year.
That's Jamar Chase, man.
Yeah.
But that's my point. is he sat out an entire year, still was drafted, and still is elite. That's my point.
But I'm saying you're comparing Ja'Marr Chase, probably the most electric wide receiver in college football.
Right.
The year before he was, you know, injured and sat out versus a Wisconsin.
Was he injured?
I don't remember.
I think he just sat out.
I think you're comparing that to, you know, like a few offensive linemen or a running back that's kind of on the fringe.
Yeah.
That really needs that game tape. But I honestly
completely forgot one job that's sitting there. It's been wide open since week three. It's Nebraska.
Oh, yeah.
Nebraska. Yeah, Nebraska is a big-time job, too. Now, granted, I think Wisconsin, the state of the program, is in a lot better spot than Nebraska.
Agreed.
It's a bigger brand right now than Nebraska because of the establishment. But even at that, you know, Nebraska's still a pretty big program, a pretty big brand. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to compete with, you know, Lance Leopold is, what, a Midwest guy anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, can Nebraska –
that's where he's going to start.
Do their boosters have more money than you? Can they, you know, fork up more money to get Lance Leopold than you can? That's where, you know, that's where that comes into question, you know, because Nebraska has been dying to be good for years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find it hard to believe that they're not going to go after a big-time hire. Because if they don't, then what was the point of firing Scott Frost? So I just feel like
there was a lot there in Nebraska that led to that.
I just feel like there has to be more to the story, because if they fired Paul Chryst just to try to get a new start, then they fired him for the wrong reasons. If it was a football move only, if there was nothing, you know, behind the scenes that went on illegally that they speculated, then they definitely made a poor decision in firing him, especially in the point that they did.
Well, I've read that it, like, within the program institutionally, there's a lot of ugliness.
Oh, really?
Well, see, that's it right there. Then
I don't know. I don't keep up with Wisconsin football. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say I do.
Yeah.
I don't keep up with it to that in depth of a scope to know exactly what those issues may be. But for me to fire a guy like that, regardless of what you're trying to compete for, 4 or 5 games into the season, based off his track record, there has to be something going on. Right. I mean,
we can disagree on what happens, you know, why or whatever, but I think we can all agree on probably wasn't the right time. Timing was probably wrong.
Not to me. I don't know all the facts, but it makes sense.
Anyways, so we'll move on to Texas A&M and the Mississippi State game. Mississippi State won 42-24. And I'm just wondering how hot the seat is for Jimbo at this point.
I don't think you're going to see a hot – I know everybody keeps saying the seat's hot, but they just paid all that money to him.
That was
– I don't think
that
the seat is going to be hot.
Hot enough?
I think he could lose out the rest of the year, and they still don't have enough justification to fire him. After all the money that they've just spent,
I think the seat would be.
They're gonna have to wait.
The seat would be on fire if they didn't like pour a gallon of water on the wood by extending his contract by an ungodly amount of years.
Good analogy.
I did not know where he was heading that with there for a second, but that's actually really good. Yeah. I'll give you credit on that. That's a really good analogy.
But yeah, I mean, I just don't think that they can afford to fire him. Like they have to keep him.
If they fired him before December 31st, you know how much he would be owed.
I don't even dare to take a
wild shot in the dark on how much he would be owed, because they extended him last year through 2031.
Yeah,
on a massive contract.
I'm gonna say $100 million buyout.
You're close. $95 million.
He's making $10 million a year, crazy. Right? I mean,
yeah,
$95 million.
Yeah. I think he's making $9 million. So, I mean, you just told me the number, but I think
Texas
has a lot
of money. You know, the state of Texas is wealthy, but ain't no way A&M's got that kind of money to.
And people,
because then after you do that, you gotta go hire another coach.
Exactly.
You gotta go pay more money to bring somebody else in.
And listen, this is not like a new topic of discussion. When they gave this man that ridiculous contract, completely unwarranted, people
mm-hmm.
said this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Today's college football is way too sporadic. I'm trying to think of a better term for it, but you guys know what I'm saying. It's just up and – there's so many
it's
up
a,
and downs.
It's a roller coaster.
Unless you're Nick Saban or Ryan Day or – I was going to say Dabo Swinney, but look at Dabo Swinney the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so –
I'm sorry, I said that wrong. 95 is what he is slated to earn. If they fired him before December 31st, he would be owed $86 million.
That's still a lot.
$86 million. The first lump sum would be 21.5, and over the next 9 years, would be paid over $7 million.
I'd take $86 million to leave and go find another job.
I would be fine to take $86 million and just go to the house.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
Just never have to worry about it again. Take a job in the booth.
Yeah.
That A&M team is so difficult to judge because they are
talented.
So inconsistent.
They are talented, but I think it comes down to coaching.
And I'll be honest. I think obviously the App State loss, the beat of Miami team, that is nowhere near where anybody thought they actually were at the time.
Everybody wants Miami to be good, but they're not.
I think Arkansas played woefully underneath what they're capable of.
Absolutely.
I agree.
And then Mississippi State just played with them like they were a dog toy. I mean, they threw the ball all over the field, all four quarters. I actually looked at this stat. A&M had 100.
We called that, though. We said that it wouldn't be a close game, and it wasn't.
A&M
wasn't
had 140 yards of penalty yards.
Say it one more time.
140 yards in penalties. Mississippi State did, excuse me. I thought I said A&M.
Oh, my goodness.
Mississippi State had 140 yards in penalties and still was able.
You probably don't know this, but was that like just false starts? And
I don't know. It was. We could probably do the division and figure out where most of them were, but it was 13 penalties for 140 yards, so. Those are pretty big penalties.
Close to 10 yards.
Those are
like
prime
starts and stuff like that. Yeah.
And like we said, Will Rogers just better quarterback, overtook the game.
Right. The better quarterback won.
I wonder, and.
Well, and better coaching.
Yes, I wonder if it hasn't happened already. Which to me, the Mississippi State game in a way kind of shows that the players may be on the fence of believing in what's taking place in A&M,
mm-hmm.
you know, as far as the coaching staff goes and the culture and et cetera, et cetera. But at what point do those players just kind of quit? I mean, and I don't know if you saw Jimbo's post-game presser or not, but just to paraphrase, one of the things he said was that the players just didn't execute the game plan we had in place, and that's why we got beat by 24 or whatever the number was. I don't have the score in front of me, but it was bad.
That's right. Not good.
You
that's,
don't.
That's
you
a
do
bad
not.
Look.
No. That's a terrible look, and you don't. You right. don't get beat by a team that is less talented than you by that much.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because you just don't execute.
Right.
Obviously, if you don't execute, you're gonna get beat.
Yeah, but.
But Not the way. I mean, not the way Saturday went.
No, I agree 100%. And
I will say though, I'm very interested to see they probably have one of the better athletes in the SEC in their backfield. At running back. I'm interested to see, and we brought this up. I think it was after the App State loss. How many of those kids transfer after this year?
I think a lot.
I think so, too.
I think
you're
going to see a mass exodus of kids.
I think so, too.
And I'm interested to see how many of those kids transfer to SEC West teams and SEC East teams.
Right.
Yeah.
And Jimbo's just, like, in a nightmare of playing the however much money he spent on this recruiting class that he says he didn't. But
I think these kids are going to figure out real quick that promises were empty and the money wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just where I sit at with that. Money wasn't worth it.
And I know we're probably going over what we expected to on this, but think about a guy like Walter Nolan.
Right.
Goes to A&M over Tennessee.
Wonder how bad he's regretting that.
At the time, obviously, A&M was the prettier situation.
Mm-hmm.
He was offered money. We know that. It's not. He was offered money.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people say he went there for the money, and I don't blame him for that.
No.
But it's interesting to me what a guy like Walter Nolan does with Tennessee and the spot they're in.
Right.
With having a top 10 team, the environments that we've had this season, the offense we have. Like, to me, that's got to be intriguing.
Yeah.
100%.
And he's coming day one. He transfers day one. He's a starting
he's
tackle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's needed.
Right.
I think it's interesting, and this is one of the reasons the transfer portal makes things a little tricky sometimes, but this is where I'm in favor of it because
he realized the mistake he made.
I think it's going to be really cool. It's really cool to see some guys transfer out from a bad situation and flourish somewhere else. And obviously, if you're a fan of the team that gets those players, you're for it. But yeah, anyways, I'm excited to see.
I think, too, we're seeing the effects of the transfer portal right now. All the craziness we've seen in college football with, you know, this team, you know, being way better than they were a year ago and teams getting upset, we're seeing the effects of the transfer portal. Mm-hmm. Look at how many – like, you could have – we could go on forever and list all these quarterbacks, just quarterbacks, that are at a different program than they were a year ago or even 2 years ago. And then you can go each position. So, transfer portal, I think – I wasn't a fan of it initially. We talked about it, you know, I think one of our very first episodes of this podcast.
There's an extent to which it goes that it's too much.
But I think that it creates a more competitive college football. Because
it certainly creates more competitiveness. It's a lot crazier college football.
Yes. And especially now with the NIL, which again I wasn't a fan of at first, but I'm slowly coming around the corner on it. The NIL creates a more even college football because they don't have to go to these massive programs to make money. They can stay, you know, I look at what's the receiver, Dakotas Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Nebraska? No, he's not Nebraska.
He left Nebraska, didn't he?
I can't remember where he – but, you know, he got that – he has like an NIL deal, which I think is super cool. The coolest NIL deal I've ever seen. He has an NIL deal with a HVAC company. And
– yeah, Ole Miss.
I can't remember where he's at now.
I thought I saw Lane say something about his.
It may be, but he doesn't have to go. Like, he's not set to a program. He's making his own money. He's making his own brand, his own name, based on him, not based on the program.
He's at Nebraska. He left LSU.
He went to Nebraska. Yes, what it was. He was at LSU. Yeah, and then went to Nebraska. So he's making money at Nebraska.
And like I said, NIL gets tricky. It could be an entire conversation on its own that could just go on for a long time.
We're not going to do that.
No, we could, though.
Oh, I know we could.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on that some other time. But
you letting it go now?
we were about to hit a rabbit hole.
We're not going to go down the Miami and the Orange Bowl rabbit hole like we did last week, right? No,
which brings me to my next point, the Rose Bowl. No, I'm joking.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that because the next game we're going to talk about is Washington and UCLA.
All right. Which, by the way,
UCLA won.
Can we just pause for a second? This is a great point to add a clip from a week ago when I talked about UCLA hanging with Washington in the Rose Bowl, and you know, just throwing that out there. But continue. Go ahead.
I'm gonna soak
this in for a minute.
If I can edit that in, I will.
We'll have to make a TikTok with that or something.
UCLA won 40-32 over Washington. And here was my point on this game, and I'm not going to spend much time on it, but it was – we talked last week about the Rose Bowl and the attendance and how Chip Kelly had kind of mentioned that the fans don't come out for the small games like South Alabama. For the bigger games. Well, this was a bigger game. Washington was ranked
– yeah.
I think it was 16, somewhere in that range. UCLA, I believe, was unranked.
Unranked. Should have been ranked. They were way overlooked.
The Rose Bowl, I looked it up, it seats 88,000.
Yep.
Do you know what attendance was for this game? Which, you know,
I watched the game. Granted, this was a Thursday or Friday night game. I can't remember. Was it a Thursday night game? I want to think it was a Thursday night game. Thursday or Friday. I'm going to say the attendance was somewhere around 50.
You're close. It was 44. It was exactly half.
Okay. Still better than what they've been getting, but not good enough. And I love the Rose Bowl. Austin and I have talked off air before. I think you and I have even talked off air before. The Rose Bowl is my favorite stadium in college football, mainly because of the venue. The Rose Bowl is the best game in college football, in my opinion. But it is time for UCLA to have a stadium on campus. Do you know how long it takes them to get from their campus to that stadium without traffic?
30 minutes.
30 minutes.
Okay, so
how are you supposed to get your entire student section? Like, I mean, you're basically every week having to market, trying to, you know, encourage people to come out. They were selling discounted tickets at local Costco's.
I'm going to let him talk, and then I'm going to argue your point.
Argue which point?
The attendance.
Okay, all right, go ahead.
But I'm going to say it's the same situation as the Orange Bowl.
No.
But no, I'm telling you. What?
I think it's a better situation than the Orange Bowl.
I'm saying it's off campus. It's
right.
No, I agree with that. Yeah.
I'm saying the same situation there, but you could put Neyland an hour away from campus. I promise you, it's
there
still
103,000. Okay, this was a Friday night game.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And that goes for Neyland. That goes for Death Valley. That goes for any program that actually.
If you said because of, you know, whatever the weather. Ohio State had to play 30 minutes away from campus.
I mean, you get people travel from halfway across the country.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Ohio State's going to travel to whatever venue it is, sell it out. But here's my point. I was at the Ball State game on a Thursday night, the opener. I guarantee you there was 90,000+ people in that stadium, and it was rocking.
Probably.
Oh, it was.
I could probably look up the attendance on it right now.
I wouldn't doubt that.
But my other point is this. Tennessee is trying to checker Vandy's stadium. Vandy is 3 hours away. And Tennessee fans are going to travel to Vandy, not only to cheer on their team, we're going to try and checker the opposing team's stadium out. Right. So the whole narrative of, well, it's 30 minutes off campus, tell it to somebody in the SEC.
Well,
it's going to matter.
That's where I was about to say, too, though. You just started my whole argument with that. Against that, college football is not as big in California and, you know, the Northwest and even the Northeast as it is in the South. It's just not. And I don't care who tries to make that argument.
I don't know, man. Oregon rocks that place every weekend.
But look at USC games. USC's attendance is just like UCLA, and USC is one of the most storied programs in all of college football. And they're having the same battle. Washington, same battle. And Washington's having a good season. Washington State had Oregon on the ropes at home in front of, what, 30,000 people? It's just different.
I agree.
SEC, it just means more. It really does mean more.
There was 92,000 at the Ball State game for UT.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. It really doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, college football is, you know, life in the Southeast. I would say probably even the Southwest. I would include, you know, a lot of the Big 12 in that. Big 10 is pretty big for most fan bases. But, you know, conferences like the ACC, the Pac-12, it's not as big. Those are more of your basketball.
Let's just call
schools.
It what it is. UCLA doesn't deserve the Rose Bowl.
I mean, I'm not going to disagree with that. Now, I will say, while we're on this subject, though, let's talk about this.
Real quick.
UCLA. DTR. That's all I'm going to say. DTR. Holy crap. That dude, did you all go look at those plays, by the way? Did you look at those clips?
Oh, I saw them before.
Yeah, I have seen a lot
impressive.
Of hurdles. I have never seen a man hurdle a guy that had already broken down and seen a man still thinking that guy's there commit to the tackle and wrap up on air.
I mean,
man literally wrapped air.
He had two guys cuddling in the end zone.
Yes, that was – he literally – stepped away from a tackle and made two people hit each other. Like, that was the most Michael Vick looking play I ever seen in college.
It was dirty.
Football.
I mean,
those
guys should probably not show their face on campus. Yeah.
No, they should not.
Right.
And
they've got to go class on Monday.
Yeah. Well, and the crazy thing is that probably
girlfriends.
You know what's crazy though? Neither one of those were his best plays of the night. You know what the best play of the night was?
Tell me.
There was a fumble that the defensive lineman picked up, and he laid into that defensive tackle who probably
threw a pick. Or about to be a pick.
It got tipped. It was a tipped pick. Yeah, he caught the pick. And that defensive tackle had to have, I would say, 150 pounds on him? Easy.
Oh, God, more than that.
Huge. He spears into the dude and causes the guy to drop the pass, drop the interception. Mm-hmm. That was his best play of the night. I mean, he had himself a day in front of, 40,000 people?
44,000.
That's just, I don't know. Which brings me to my next point. Chip Kelly is not staying at UCLA. He's gone after this year.
I think so.
He has to be.
I think so. I think he's on the market. Not because they fire him. But because
no, I think he's going to take another job.
I think so.
Are we getting into this? Or
No. We're not going down this rabbit hole. Because we're fixing to wrap this episode up.
You'd be surprised, though, if I told you where I think he lands. And I'll just leave it at this, and we'll go.
No. You can't open that Pandora's box. You got to tell us.
He's a West Coast guy.
He's going to Georgia Tech. He's going to end up at Georgia Tech. End of story. His playing style, those kids are the type of kids that he wants. That he has the recruiting grounds right there. He's going to Georgia Tech. That's exactly where I think he ends up.
If Auburn fires Harsin,
I don't think he goes to the SEC.
I don't think he wants any part of anywhere in the Southeast, but that's just me.
I'm saying that opens up. I think you're right. I think you're in the region.
And I think a Chip Kelly at Georgia Tech would be, whoo.
It'd be fun.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to see Chip Kelly at Auburn.
All right, last game we're going to talk about. I'm with you, though. Last game we're going to talk about, and then we're going to end for today. We'll be back tomorrow with our game picks. But the last game for today is Missouri almost pulled the upset.
Why are we talking about this?
Georgia 26, Missouri 22. Georgia had to have 14 fourth quarter points to pull this off.
Well, it shows that Georgia's human.
Yeah, they are human.
I think we've seen Georgia's human in the past 2 weeks. We can't state it now.
Or three.
We have, but Sanford
wasn't a good one either.
For them to show up against an SEC opponent.
Sorry, Austin.
No, I was just going to say that, I mean, we see – it's not an excuse. We see a lot of teams play down sometimes in these games that just really don't matter. They're kind of just like a – I know they don't view it this way, or they shouldn't, but it's almost kind of like a bye week. Let's get to next week, actually play a real game.
That's funny that you say that.
It was Samford, but it was week two.
Yeah, they've not looked good.
Since
I don't think they've looked dominant – since week one.
I mean, they beat South Carolina.
For me, it's more.
But they dominated South Carolina.
It's more alarming. Oh. It's more alarming to me for them to show up against an SEC team and play that way, because there's no excuse for them show up.
Let's put an asterisk beside the SEC team. That was Missouri. It wasn't SEC team.
There's still a lot of that's the Vandy of the West.
I mean, well, they're in the East.
They're still in the East. But they're Vandy part two. Right.
Yeah, they're what, a notch above Vandy?
Barely.
Well, okay, half a notch above Vandy.
I'm just saying, it's still a road conference game. You just don't expect a veteran team like that to show up,
right,
in a game like that. Right. But
I get it on the road.
If you're an SEC team, you feel a little bit better. I'm not gonna say you feel a whole lot better. Feel a little bit better. Especially, we keep talking about Tennessee, and I try not to, but. This isn't even about being a Tennessee fan. This is just the implication of that game for the SEC East. Georgia loses that game. Holy cow.
Yeah, well, let's just say
pandemonium ensues, not just because of a Tennessee.
Flies open.
I don't care.
It's a national implication.
Well, I mean, yes.
But, yeah. I mean, that door's wide open for not only anybody in the SEC, but nationally. Because then you're looking at, Alabama probably wins the SEC.
Right.
That opens up that fourth playoff spot.
Yeah.
Because if Georgia suffers a second loss, they're not getting in.
And I will say, too, I don't care if I sound like a homer or not. If Tennessee and Georgia played Saturday, based on what I saw from that Georgia team, Tennessee wins by three scores.
Tennessee wins by 21.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, Saturday, they win by.
It's over. Right. But now, granted, you know, that's why you play. You know, every week is mm-hmm. anybody can be beat any given Saturday.
And we're going to talk about this tomorrow because I've told you guys already there's a couple of these games that – it's unranked versus ranked. It's a trap game.
Is Georgia on a bye week this week? Who do they have this week? Because I just wonder if they were overlooking Missouri for the next game. But if they're on a bye week, then there is no excuse.
Well, I think I don't think there's any doubt.
Georgia plays.
Who do they play?
Auburn.
They play Auburn, yeah. Yeah. It's a 3:30 CBS slot.
It's a what?
It's a 3:30 CBS slot.
I know that's a rivalry, but a 3:30?
No, Tennessee LSU should have gotten that slot. But
That's crazy. Now, I'll say this, though. Now, granted, guys, I'm not saying I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think there's a chance. But if Auburn somehow manages to win this game, does Brian Harsin save his job?
He buys himself some leeway. I don't know that he keeps his job, or if he saves his job.
Yeah.
But he buys himself some leeway depending on how the rest of the season. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, you know, he can win this game if he wins it. I mean, that's a big if. But if he wins that, let me see.
That's arguably the biggest win Auburn's had in, what, 5 years?
To me, there's a lot of what.
If he can win this game and then beat a Arkansas, Mississippi State, or Texas A&M, any of the three, he keeps his job.
Because they're bowl eligible.
Because they would not only be bowl eligible, but they beat
some
quality opponents, and he can kind of show that it's going in the right direction.
I think he wins this game. His job's probably safe for at least this season.
There's a lot of ifs there, though.
Well, I think he's safe till bowl season, and then they'll look at whether to fire him or not.
How are we saying he finishes the season after the Georgia game?
I'm saying if he beats Georgia,
okay, so we're
and then loses the rest of the schedule, I think he's still buying himself enough time.
I don't think there's absolutely no way.
I'm with Austin on this.
We had this conversation about Eli Drinkwitz as well. There's absolutely no way Missouri.
Well, and my thing with that, though, is who are they going to get? Who do they hire?
I'll say this. I think the game against Georgia may have bought him another year.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. Like,
but Harsin's in a different situation.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Obviously, Harsin's the expectations at Auburn are much greater than Missouri.
Exactly. But let's say Austin, you know, if he beats Georgia and then he beats, let's say, an A&M or Mississippi State, either one, does he keep his job for one more year?
If he beats Georgia and A&M or Georgia, Mississippi State?
Yes, Georgia and one or the other.
Probably.
Does he keep his job?
I don't.
Probably.
Probably, at least for one more year, right?
Well, I mean, what would that put his record at? I mean, for me, Auburn was ready to get rid of this dude before the season even started.
Consider it. I mean, if he beats Western Kentucky, who is on his schedule,
wasn't fair, he'd be six wins.
So he's bowl eligible.
So he'd be bowl eligible.
I don't think he would. No.
With a win over the number one team, number two team in the country, might as well say the number one team in the country.
Yeah, I still don't.
Okay. I'm just throwing it out there.
I think there's a lot
of variables that play into this situation. How does Georgia look when they play? How does Auburn look when they play? I mean, how do they lose the remaining games that they do lose? You know, like there's a lot of variables that go into the conversation, but I'm just saying,
for argument's sake, what do you think? I don't know.
I think they really want to get rid of him.
I agree.
They've probably already made their mind up.
All right. So, that's all I've got. Jesse, you have anything else?
I don't know.
Austin, you good?
I'm good.
All right. Strike up the band. Guys, this has been our Week 5 recap. There it is. This has been our Week 5 recap. Getting ready for Week 6. Our game picks are coming out tomorrow. Guys, please join us on that. Follow us on TikTok, Facebook, and on Twitter. We're all constantly posting stuff on there. Guys, until next time, this has been the Gridiron Gurus. Appreciate it.